Welcome to the Retirement Risk Show, the best retirement interviews and advice with Dave Hall. Learn strategies to help you reduce and even eliminate the risks facing your retirement.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name's Dave Hall. I am your host. We are back again talking about retirement, talking about those years where you get the opportunity to do what you want, whether it's to go out and travel, whether it's to visit kids and grandkids, go out and play pickleball, ride horses, whatever it is. Retirement's all about doing those things that you couldn't do during your working years. If you'd like to learn more about what you can do to get safely through retirement, go to my website, retirementriskadvisors.com. Here you will get access to our educational tools, our live events, my new book, Getting Safely Through Retirement, everything you need to help you better understand and navigate the path that you will go down to get into those retirement years. Today, we're going to be talking about one of the top 10 risks that I cover in my book and that we talk about in our live events, and that is withdrawal rate risk. To help me with this, brought in my partner and good friend, Brian Britt. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Always great to be here and certainly great to talk about stuff that I think a lot of people don't take the time to just think about when they're planning out the future. If we can shed some light on that and maybe just get people to step outside the normal box of retirement planning discussion, then we have done our job for the day.
Yeah, we absolutely have. And I'd like to open the show today by sharing an experience that happened this last week with Dave Ramsey. Now, I don't talk a whole lot about Dave Ramsey on the show because I think a lot of the information that he gives is not good sound financial information. But there was an experience this last week where one of his staff, George Camel, ended up doing a podcast where he used math and science to go back to saying that someone in the FIRE community should be using a 3% distribution rate. He talked about 4%, went down to 3% using the honestmath.com website, and he came back with the 3%. Well, Dave Ramsey, in one of his live shows, finds this out for the first time inside of the show. A caller calls in, mentions they'd seen the article, and Dave goes ballistic, calling Georgia an idiot, saying he had no brains. I mean, it was ridiculous to see what he would do to his own employee, as well as any other financial advisor out there that may think you can only use 3 or 4%. His staff that was on the show with him questions him and says, hey, what about even a 5%? Dave doubles down and says, 8%, that's what it is. You got $1 million, you should be getting 8%. So I wanted to throw that out to you, Brian, and see what some of your thoughts are, as we've got someone out there that has a pretty big megaphone trying to tell the world that 8% is the standard rate everybody should be using.
So shockingly, I'm going to defend Dave Ramsey for a moment and Sue Zorman and people that do what they do. So these guys are in the business not of being true architects of financial advice. They're in the business to sell books. And when you think about it, we deal with a very educated client base that certainly respects math and research and proof. That's not who's buying the Dave Ramsey and the Sue Zorman books, right? So my feeling is, I think what Dave is trying to do is he's trying to appeal to his audience. And his audience, who, you know, is probably not in that net worth tier that we focus on, would probably get so discouraged if they heard that on $1 million, which probably seems like an impossible number for them to even accumulate, they could only live on 40 grand a year before taxes. They probably would just throw in the towel altogether and not even do anything. They'd say, I'll never get to $1 million. I'll never retire. So I'm not even going to bother. And I think what Dave and Sue's do is they try to appeal to that lower tier of people that are not our clients. I'm saying, hey, you only need to have 500,000 and then you could live on 40 grand a year. Don't worry about it. It'll be great. And maybe at the end of the day, if it caused that person not to tap out of the game altogether, maybe they're doing a good service for the general public. We, you and I, are not in the business of dealing with the general public. We deal with a very, very specific group of highly educated people that are super math driven. In fact, they won't move forward unless we can prove our plan to be valid and accurate. So again, I know it's shocking that I might be defending Dave, but the point is, it's just a different audience, and our people are really looking for true sound, as you said, math-based, science-based, proven financial advice where we can literally spreadsheet out the rest of their life and they could look at any age they want to and figure out, realistically, when I'm 81 years old with an inflation rate of 3% and a growth rate of 5% on my money, I could spend $97,250 that year and never run out of money, even if I live to 100. That's what our people want, and that's what we do.
And as we look at it, even on Dave's side, well, he did use simple math to try to back up what he was saying if I get 12% rate of return, which I would argue that the general public's not going to get there, but
no way.
He used the 12% rate of return. He used 4% inflation, which is high over the last 100 years, closer to 3% when we look back over the last 100 years. Yes, we've had some high years. And says, hey, it makes sense to be able to take out aid. But I agree with you. I like that he gives hope to America. Obviously, a lot of what he's doing is trying to get people to get out of debt, get where they need to be. But you and I both know, as we get into these higher income areas and we look at sequence of return, one, we don't know people are getting 12% over the 20, 30 year period of time that they're investing.
No way.
But we also don't have a situation where you're going to get that every year without having down years. It's not like it's going to just come in year after year at that amount. So let's talk a little bit about sequence of return. I know that's not necessarily what we want to cover today, but it has a big impact on why we would say these rates are going to be a little high for individuals that are have got the money and are really trying to get to the secure position they want to be in.
Well, let's talk about two different things, because I can't let that slide what you just said, the 12%, right? So what a lot of times when I'm meeting with a client and we're talking about different solutions that will fit into the blueprint we built, right? So the actual product solutions that we will ultimately recommend it only after we've built the entire blueprint and proven all of our theories mathematically. And a lot of times we'll look at stuff, you know, that is principal protected, can never have a down year. And over the last 20 years, the worst it's ever done is 10% a year. And I always ask people when they look at that, I go, let me ask you a question. In your managed portfolios, your stocks, bonds, mutual funds, your 401k, even if you have a manager over at a brokerage firm that's charging you an annual fee to manage money in the stock market, have you made 10% a year net in your pocket in the worst 10 years of the last 20? And everybody said, in my worst 10 years of the last 20, I don't even know if I made any money, but maybe I made 3 or 4%. There's no way I made 10. And here we have someone out there who has the ear of the public with a very loud megaphone, as you said, and they're talking about 12. So that's crazy talk. But if your goal is to give people hope and have them not tap out and just continue having them in the game rather than saying, I'm just never going to retire. I don't care. I'm not even going to worry about retirement. Then again, there may be some value to what Dave is doing for humanity, right? But to answer your question about sequence of returns, what does that even mean? So we could take, for example, someone who's in CDs, let's just use today's rates, and over the next 20 years, if the rates never change again, obviously that's not going to happen, they make 5% a year. Okay. And then we have someone in a balanced stock bond portfolio, and over the 20 years, they make 5% a year on average. Okay. So at the end of the 20 years, if both of those scenarios, no one took any money out, right? No one took any withdrawals out. They both truly made 5% a year, right? You got 5% on your CD. You average 5% a year on your brokerage account. But as long as you didn't take any money out, you should have the same balance at the end of the day. The difference becomes when you start removing money from the equation while the numbers are playing out. So if, for example, the guy who has the brokerage account starts removing money in down years, especially if they happen in the earlier years of that sequence, he will run out of money dramatically sooner than the person who theoretically got the same return as he did in the bank CD, but never had a down year. So sequence of returns is not an issue if you are not taking money out of the account. Sequence of returns is everything if you're making withdrawals, or by the way, if you're making deposits. Right? So we have something, it's either a time-weighted rate of return or a dollar-weighted rate of return, right? Time-weighted is kind of just looking at what's been the return of this product over 10 or 20 years. But dollar-weighted is where we have to use a formula to compensate for you adding money to the account. Maybe in a down year, you add a bunch of money, then it goes up, you're kicking butt, right? Or on the other side of the coin, removing money from the account. The problem with retirees They're still thinking like people who are in the accumulation phase of their life. They're not yet thinking like people that are in the deaccumulation phase or the distribution phase. In our practice, you and I together, we end up bringing on a lot of clients that had very established relationships for many years with a broker or a portfolio manager or whatever, an investment representative, right? Where they'll leave that person and move everything over to us because that person was really more in the mindset in the accumulation phase. Here's how we're going to make the best returns. This is how we're going to protect your money. But when you start changing your life into a distribution phase, the sequence of how your returns get plotted on that chart will make or break whether you're going to run out of money or not.
And the problem is we don't have a crystal ball. So none of us know what that's going to be. You look back at 2000, you look back at 2008, had so many clients that were in retirement and thought they were going to be able to stay there and all of a sudden woke up and said, wait a second, this isn't happening. 2000, obviously, is such a, you know, 3 years of a down market. They had to go back to work. 2008, I had a number of clients I was working with in my tax business that were in real estate trustees. Well, they were getting 12%, thought they were going to get it for the rest of their retirement, woke up one morning, not only were they no longer getting 12%, but their portfolio had gone down by half. All of a sudden, they're waking up going, I don't even know what I'm going to do for the rest of my retirement years. And it just shows that these average rates of return, this sequence of return plays a huge part in our distributions. And when we do our planning, if you don't do anything to solve this issue, yeah, we're going to say 2.5 to 3% with Monte Carlo simulations, probably going to be where most of you fall. But there are ways to fix this, Brian, to get into that closer to the 6, maybe 7, 8% that Dave Ramsey is talking about, but it isn't with just regular stock market 12% rate of return. Can you talk a little bit about what can be done to help you bump that withdrawal rate up by doing appropriate planning?
Sure. So there's a couple of risks we have to deal with when we are acting as architects to build out a blueprint that's trying to model a future that we really don't know exactly what it's going to look like. We don't really know what the true rate of inflation is going to be. We don't really know what the average rate of returns are going to be. So we're sitting here trying to model all this stuff. We can't really control that, but we can control a couple of things. So the first thing is let's just talk about two different kinds of risk for your market money, for the money that you have in the market, right? You have systemic risk and you have unsystemic or unsystematic risk, right? So basically the unsystematic risk is the risk that Wall Street, where I've spent 37 years now, Wall Street kind of marketed to us that you can solve your risk problems by leaving all your money with us full time. No, that's not a surprise, right? But diversifying between stocks and bonds. So if you have a 60-40 or a 50-50 or a 40-60 portfolio and the market crashes down, because of that balance between these two different items, one is debt, one's an equity item, right? One's ownership in a company, one is lending money to a company, as in a bond. If you have the right balance, it's going to kind of smooth out your path. And over the long run, you're going to do well. And in fact, that's a valid theory. It won a Nobel Prize in basically in 1990. The guy wrote the paper. It was a thesis for a doctorate for Harry Markowitz. It was called Modern Portfolio Theory. Our audience has probably heard of it. And he won a Nobel Prize for it in 1990. So it's valid. But let me tell you when it's not valid. It's not valid when you have a systemic market correction. What does that mean? The system has melted. I mean, stocks, bonds, real estate, and commodities are all going down at the same time. You could be as diversified as you want, and you are going to get slaughtered. And here's the proof of that. In 2008, a 60-40 portfolio lost almost 36% of its value. 60-40. But I'm going to bring you even more current. Go last year, 2022. What was the worst performing investment you ever could have had $1 million in? U.S. government guaranteed treasury bonds. You lost $300,000 or $400,000 or whatever it was, depending on the maturity of those bonds. You lost a ton of money. It looked like a terrible stock purchase, and yet you were in U.S. government treasury bonds. Why? Because interest rates skyrocketed, and those treasury bonds immediately lost a tremendous amount of market value if you tried to sell them. So that's the first issue, is understanding the difference between those risks, right? Well, you can't diversify away the risk of a market meltdown with stocks and bonds. But what you can do is, rather than trying to mess with stocks and bonds and figure out the mix that Wall Street has convinced us all is the way to go, diversify some of that money into a place that's impossible to lose money, into a guaranteed principal protected contract. Now, what is that? Well, that could be a CD at a bank. That's a principal protected contract. It could be a structured note from a bank. It could be a fixed annuity at an insurance company. That's a principal protected guaranteed strategy. It could be an indexed annuity where you can't lose any money if the market goes down, but you participate in the upside of the indexes if it goes up. Regardless of which instrument you use to get some money in principal protected contracts, if you now pull back and you look at the balance between guaranteed money and what you and I refer to as casino money, start worrying about your balance between those two items. And then if you do that, the interesting thing is your risk money, the money that's in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, you can actually be a lot more aggressive. You could go more for NASDAQ and, you know, you could go for Russell 2000 type stocks. You could go for more tech if you want. You can really shoot for the fences and really go for growth because you have this whole chunk of money that's guaranteed by a large bank or a large insurance company that you can't have a negative year. So that to me is the ultimate weapon against the sequence of return risk. Because if you have, for example, you're in that distribution phase, you're paying your bills, you are now unemployed for the rest of your life, as in retirement, and you get a big down market. Well, part of your portfolio is going to go down and part of your portfolio is not even going to blink. Well, let's just say there's a massive market crash. Your casino money gets hit, as it always does, right? But you have a nice big chunk of money sitting in a principal protected contract. You now have the luxury of paying your bills for the next 1, 2, or 3 years from the principal protected money only and letting your portfolio recuperate as if you were still working. Because this is why working people can take a lot more risk, because if the market crashes and it takes 6 years to recover, they don't care. They'll just let their 401k come back and they'll pay their bills from their income. Well, when you're in retirement, you can pay your bills from your guaranteed bucket and allow your casino money to recover, which historically it always has.
Which then allows you to get larger distribution rates, allows those withdrawal rates to go up, because now this big sequence of return issue that's destroying so many retirement accounts across America using the stock bond portfolio mix, you don't have to worry about so much because now you've taken that off the table.
Right. So, you know, what's interesting, back to our buddy Dave Ramsey, we absolutely, when we build financial plans, absolutely we can come up with a better than 4%. But not by hoping and praying for 12%. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely reckless behavior, if you ask me. Saying you're going to get 12% on average per year, and then you could take 8 and spend it, and 4 is for inflation. First of all, that assumes no variation in those returns, by the way, as you know, right? Mathematically, I mean, if you told me I was going to get 12% in a CD for the next 20 years, okay, Dave and I are on the same page. But 12% average, that means I'm going to have years that I'm down 20%. And I'm still going to pull 8% from the value of that portfolio. You and I can show that on paper to anyone that wants to see it from the classes that we teach, from that page on sequence of return risk, that you crash. Your portfolio goes to zero compared to the guy getting the CD return and never having the fluctuation. So again, we know why people do what they do, and it's fine. And as long as our listeners and our viewers understand that, hey, that's, you know, that's a different group, a different demographic. You're not in it. You're in a whole different socioeconomic demographic that we are most likely going to be using different strategies than maybe the mass public, right?
Yeah, the great thing about what we do that I love about it is it gets tested all the time, not only by the CPAs themselves, but many times they know other people in the industry that they're going to take our plans and have them test what we do. And the math and science continually comes back and says these plans are designed to allow you to maximize your retirement. That's math and science support all of that. And that's why I found a little odd with Dave Ramsey. But again, we know where he's at. We know what he's doing. And again, our goal is to just make sure using conservative rates of return, using conservative assumptions, that we can still get you where you need to be. And if you end up getting higher than that and you knock it out of the park, which we hope you all do, then great. That means either you got more money that you can do other things with in retirement. You can leave a bigger legacy to those loved ones that you have, whether it be kids, grandkids, or charitable organizations.
Absolutely. And, you know, just thinking about this. So before you and I started together back in 2019, when this whole empire just started off the ground, right? Before that, as you know, I was teaching at UCSD for 5 years, retirement planning to adults. Very rarely did I run across CPAs coming to my classes, right? I had doctors and lawyers and business owners and just regular people, right? And then when you and I started, we did retirement risk advisors. All of a sudden, I'm now 95% CPAs. And what I can tell you, and the reason that I've absolutely just fallen in love with dealing with CPAs, and when I say CPAs, I mean tax professionals as well, right? So whether it's a CPA or a registered agent, it's irrelevant. The point is tax people or people that are just, again, very mathematically driven. In my former life, before you and I worked together, you could show all the numbers you wanted to. And sometimes the emotion just took over and they were like, yeah, but I'm still going to wait. I'm not going to do anything. But you show a CPA numbers and you prove it. They are literally compelled to take action because they're like, got it, done. All the boxes have been checked. I did my homework. I proved the theories to be correct. Their hypothesis was completely reasonable. I'm moving forward on all the things I'm supposed to be doing to make this stuff happen for me in my personal life. Let me tell you, that is the most, to me, the most equitable world I want to live in. It's really based on facts and figures and hard work of building a good plan. But you could do that again in my former years. I'd have a heart surgeon looking at it and go, yeah, but I'm still going to wait. I don't know. I'm just going to wait. My brother-in-law said, you know, this thing is not really good. So I'm just going to wait. And you're like, oh my God, did you see the numbers? Right. So I really, really enjoy working with the CPA community because they're just numbers people. And that's what we are. We're numbers people.
It is cool because our retirement should be based upon facts and numbers and math, not emotion anyway. One of the biggest mistakes we make about our retirement is when we get too emotionally involved and leads us to make bad decisions. And the other great thing about what we do, Brian, is a lot of those CPAs are married to engineers. So they also are very math driven. So you've got both sides of the equation there that are looking at these things and saying, hey, we like what it does. You've shown us how it's going to work, what it's going to do for our retirement, and we're ready to move forward and get ourselves in the best position we can.
You know, I often wondered if there was a dating site called CPA meets engineer, you know, it's like bagel meets coffee, right? I don't know, because it does seem really interesting. But I think, you know what it is? I think CPAs and engineers, they just probably feel compatible with each other because they're numbers driven people. They're spreadsheet driven people. They want proof, and then they're okay moving forward when they have the proof, right? And to me, that's the best world that I could live in as a financial planner, is to deal with logical people that if you do the work and you can prove the math and your hypothesis is reasonable, they take action. And that's a good place. So I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
The dating site is the school library, Brian. You don't know this, but I learned this clear back in my early years of college when we were in there doing all of our homework because accounting takes a lot of homework. In fact, half our class dropped out once we had intermediate accounting, became finance majors because it was just too hard. They didn't want to put in the time. And so you get in the library and our joke was clear back then as an early 21, 22, 23 year old was that if someone else was in the library that we didn't know, they had to be an engineer because they were the only other ones on campus that were putting that amount of time into their studies. Teacher wasn't in there. These other jobs that other people were doing at our school were not in there. It was us and the engineers. So probably a lot of truth to that one too, that again, as you got, we're hanging out in the library, everybody else was out partying. You had to have somebody to go have dinner with and spend time with. And so you start building some of those bonds. But regardless of what it is, great opportunity to be able to work with people that understand math. And for those that don't, to be able to share our math and knowledge with them so that they can better understand what the retirement can and should look like.
Absolutely.
Our time's come and gone. Appreciate you being here today. Always fun to talk with you and to allow you to share your great ideas with our listeners to better understand these concepts and better understand really why the withdrawal rates are so important and some of the things that can be done to increase those to allow you to have a better retirement without taking more risk.
I do have one question before we end.
Yeah.
Did you meet your wife in a college library?
I did not. I met her at church. So
okay. That's how I met. So she's not an engineer.
No, she isn't. So a funny story about this. There's a bit much bigger story we don't have time to share here on this podcast. But when I went to church for the first time at college, our church group was made up of a section of the community and the girls' dorm. So I show up to church for the first time, the 100 plus people at church. Four of us are all that were men. The others were girls.
So
we had four guys and 100-something girls in our congregation. And obviously, it didn't take long for the other guys to realize this was the place to be on Sunday to have a bunch of other girls there. So it allowed me to have the pick of the crop. Now, all that being said, going back beyond that, and my wife and I didn't know this when we met, her grandfather is who put me through college. I came from a poor family, didn't have the money I needed to pay for college. My parents didn't have any idea how I was going to do it. I went out and got a scholarship that was paid by my wife's grandfather. Again, not having no idea that I would one day marry her, didn't even know who she was. Her uncle had passed away and they'd put this scholarship together. I get it, able to educate myself. And then I meet her and became a great family story that he made sure I got educated so I could take care of his granddaughter for her life. So it's very interesting how things work.
That's a great story. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. I didn't know that. Thank you for sharing that. That's really good.
Absolutely. Well, listeners, great having you with us as well this week. Look forward to seeing each of you again next week, where we'll address another risk that you're going to face or another topic that you need to know about as you go into those retirement years.
And that's today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to wherever you get your podcast.
The Retirement Risk Show is a production of the Retirement Risk Advisors. Our show was produced by Sierra Talin and Autumn Koenig. If you're a CPA looking for more retirement education, visit retirementriskadvisors.com.